This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins.
And a very good morning to you. It is Sunday, March 22nd, and we have a very busy show ahead. But before we get to that, you know, you probably remember last week about this time, we were talking about a snowstorm forecast, but at least today we're looking forward to nicer weather. Well, Friday marked the first day of spring. And of course, as we're thinking about spring, we're thinking about all those little baby chicks and bunnies and goats and cows. Well, what better way to celebrate spring than to maybe visit them? And joining us on our WTMJ hotline is Sheila Everhart. She is the executive director of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. And Sheila, you have a way for people to bring their kiddos to all these farms and visit the baby animals.
Yes, Libby, we have a new digital passport called Spring Babies on the Farm, which features 25 Wisconsin farms that families can load on their phone, and they can go to participating farms that are featuring the baby lambs, calves, chickens, goats, piglets, and other spring arrivals. It is easy to do. It's a passport that runs through today through May 31st, and some of our farms are offering special events as well. This is a free digital passport. It's not an app. It's something that you can load on your phone to find these farms that are participating and invite you to Spring Baby on the Farm to see the animals being born, to see the fields coming back to life. The farmers are excited to welcome guests onto their farms. And, you know, spring is a time of year that Mother Nature sometimes throws us a curve. So it's really important that before our guests go to the farms, they want to check to make sure the farms are open. Like, there are some farms that are open today for guests to visit, such as Busy Barns Farm Adventures, just a short country drive from Milwaukee in Fort Atkinson. And they are open today from 9 until 1. And then we have Apple Holler, which is a scenic drive from Milwaukee just in Sturtevant. And they are also open today from 10:30 until noon for you to come and visit the baby animals. And if you're in another part of the state, we have Govan's Farm, and what I love about Govan's Farm is this year they're expecting 750 babies to be born on their farm in Menominee. And Govan's Farm is also open today from 9 until 4.
Sheila, this sounds like such an opportunity for people to bring their kids to see these animals and to get up close. Now, I understand they can actually touch the animals. It's like an interactive experience.
Yes, Govan's theory is if they can fit into your lap, you can hold and cuddle them. So many of our farms, like Kelly's Farmstead over in Fond du Lac that will be open April 3rd, they are having 80 ewe lambs, 100 chirping chickens, 4 litters of bunnies, 25 goat kids, 5 little piglets, 4 calves, and 40 quacking ducks, as well as their 3 pet donkeys for you to feed, for you to pet, for you to cuddle.
Oh, did I see one of the farms actually has a baby porcupine?
Yes, that is Eagle Eye Farm up in River Falls, Wisconsin. That is such a unique farm because they have a baby porcupine as well as they have a kangaroo. And so no need to travel to Australia. Just go to Eagle Eyes Farm in River Falls.
All right. So, Sheila, let's talk about how you get involved in this, because as you said, this is completely free. You want to get that passport so you can visit these farms and find out which farms are open on which days between now and May 31st. How do we find out more information?
Well, you go to the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association website. That is WIAGTourism.com, WIAGTOURISM.com. Right in the header is a circle that says Spring Babies on the Farm Digital Passport. click right on that. It'll take you to the link. You sign up, and then it comes right to your inbox. And then you can start planning your spring ag venture. Now, this passport program runs through May 31st. So, of course, we want you to take a day trip and visit as many farms as you can. And along the way, when you check in at these farms, you can earn points. And the passport winner who earns the most points will be eligible for a two-night farm stay at Irish Acres in New London, Wisconsin.
Oh, Sheila, this is such a great event, something fun for the entire family to do. And best of all, it's free. Sheila Everhard, Executive Director for the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, thanks so much for sharing this experience with us.
My pleasure, and thank you for having us on. We hope to do it again sometime.
It's 8:13 and 38 degrees. It sounds like so much fun. I wish I had grandkids to take. I mean, I would love doing that, and I really want to see that baby porcupine. All right, well, it is spring, and that means baseball. And Brewers opening day against the Chicago White Sox is going to be Thursday, well, at noon at 9. WTMJ's Dominic Catronio is going to join us with a look at what we can expect this season. Dom will break it all down. You know, it seems that every week we're hearing about plans for another data center. And later on this morning, we're going to be talking with somebody who's concerned about what it is going to end up costing you, and we'll break it down for you. Also, we're going to be joined by Tim Gibbons, Editor-in-Chief of the Milwaukee Business Journal. He's going to talk about some of the plans for AmFam Field. You'll be seeing those soon. Now, this past week, if you were watching TV at all, you could not have missed it. ABC was supposed to introduce a new kind of Bachelorette Tonight. But boy, is she a hot mess. I mean, the things that we have been hearing and seeing on some of those videos. Well, Sandy Max is going to join us, and she's going to talk about why an entire season of that show has been scrapped and what it's going to be costing ABC. Also, we're going to talk with our consumer expert. She's going to warn us about some scammers posing as members of law enforcement. We'll take a look back at the week in review. Nice ears in the newsroom. We've got Isaac pushing those buttons. And coming up in 2 minutes, we're going to have your Sunday forecast. Maybe a little bit overcast today, but the rest of the week is looking pretty good. It's all ahead on WTMJ. It's 8:15 at 38 degrees. It's going to be mostly cloudy today. It'll be breezy, cooler. We've got a few sprinkles, maybe even a stray shower is possible. We're only going to get up to 41 degrees. Then tonight, cloudy, down to 25. Tomorrow we start to see the sun. It's going to start warming up just a little bit. Now, if you're near the lake, it'll be about 40 for a high, but further inland, around 46. Then on Tuesday, the clouds come back, 53 for a high temperature. On Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of a shower, and 52 for a high. And then Thursday, we've got cloudy skies, another chance of a shower, and a high of 58. Of course, it's spring. We need that rain, right? Currently in Brookfield, it's 38 degrees. Richfield has 37. Delafield's at 39. And it's 38 degrees at 8:18 on WTMJ. Coming up next, it is Tim Gibbons from the Milwaukee Business Journal. And are you aware there's another food truck park coming to Milwaukee? We'll tell you where it is right after this. It's time to check in with Tim Gibbons, Editor-in-Chief of the Milwaukee Business Journal. Let's find out about some of the new projects that we can expect to see at American Family Field.
Well, I mean, obviously, people are excited about the baseball, but the thing they're really excited about are construction projects at the stadium. That we all know that that's why people go to baseball games. The business reporter and me talking. So, yes, we're excited for opening day, but we're also excited for some of the projects that are lined up at American Family Field. So one of the cool things that's in the works as they go through all this construction is a new 20,000 square foot addition that will be available for rental by both the general public and season ticket holders out there at the stadium. So a lot of the construction stuff has kind of been in the background. Listeners know about the entire $500 million funding package that's going to winterize the stadium and make it usable more or less year round. But basically, it turns out there's more going on, and that outdoor patio area is an exciting part of the conversation.
Now, how much of this is going to be completed during this 2026 season?
Yeah, basically none of it. So work will be done. The outdoor area is supposed to be wrapped up by early 2027. The winterization and all of that, that's the big project, the $25 million winterization project. That's going to be wrapped up in early 2028. And that's going to basically allow indoor events to take place even when the weather's bad.
When you say indoor events, are you talking about stadium type concerts?
That is the big question that we've been asking kind of since this entire thing started. And yes, kind of is probably the best answer. So the idea of, you know, you picture a concert that could take place at the baseball grounds there, and you say, okay, let's do them during the winter. Now, there's some amount of the type of acts that do concerts in stadiums don't necessarily tour during the winter, so it's not entirely clear how much or exactly what type of events will be taking place. But when you think about the size and the stature of that venue, having it be able to be used year-round obviously just gives the area another option for entertainment things.
All right. Well, let's move on to, because it takes money to produce these kinds of projects. So let's look at some local financial institutions, because a couple of them made some changes. Let's begin with Associated Bank. Tell us what's going on with them.
So they've named a new head of the market for Milwaukee, replacing a longtime leader who's really had a big impact here in the area. So Neil Riebelman is going to be replacing John Utz, who was in that role for about 11 years. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this story is, these are people who are well known in the business community, and the move itself is interesting, you know, just from a career sort of standpoint. But the thing that really grabbed me was kind of what it says for Associated and how it sees the future. So John, who had been market president for over a decade, is moving into a role that's kind of looking more nationally, helping to push the bank into more areas and serve more customers. And it's part of this ongoing growth process that Associated Bank has been going through, both organically and through acquisitions, where they're entering new markets and they're growing their customer base. And you know, I think sometimes we think of Associated as, you know, the hometown bank, which obviously I think they would want you to think about them that way. But they really are getting more of a regional presence in a very strong way.
Are we talking about that they're going to cross state lines, or are they just in Wisconsin right now?
No, they have cross state lines. Actually, as part of their acquisition, they made an acquisition last year that has them expanding even more into new geographies. And I can't remember if they're going to be the first largest or second largest bank in the Omaha area. Basically, they're reaching throughout. They're already in the Twin Cities. They have a presence of sorts in Texas. They'll be the second largest bank in Omaha and the 10th largest bank in the Twin Cities.
Speaking of financial institutions crossing state lines, Landmark Credit Union is also expanding their footprint.
Yeah, and this is interesting because it involves two local financial institutions. So Landmark Credit Union is expanding into Illinois, and they are buying an Illinois branch from North Shore Bank. So North Shore is primarily focused on Wisconsin, but they had this one branch in Illinois. So Landmark is picking it up. It's giving them an entree into that market. And it kind of shows, again, there's a strategic bit here that might be more interesting than just a bank branch being sold. Landmark, they've been very active in opening branches. So they're really looking at this geographic and customer growth sort of thing. At the same time, the reason North Shore sold it is they're seeing success. They're the 10th largest bank in the Milwaukee area. They've been kind of tweaking their branch structure with a goal of growing even more here locally. So this sale of the branch, again, stands as a interesting deal on its own, but it really does reflect a strategic focus from both institutions as they're moving ahead.
Do you think it has any connection to the fact that we're seeing more and more people from Illinois moving to Wisconsin?
There always is that question of how you, as a business and financial institutions particularly, but kind of how you do the interplay between geographies. So obviously the growth that we're seeing in Kenosha and those other areas to the south really is strengthening the corridor between Milwaukee and Chicago and is making it more robust.
We're talking with Tim Gibbons. He's editor-in-chief of the Milwaukee Business Journal. And Tim, I can tell by the tone of your voice this morning, you're sounding a little bit hungry.
and there might soon be a new place to go to for people who have that desire. A new food truck park is being proposed on Milwaukee's south side. It's in the early planning stages, so we're not going to be able to head over there this afternoon, but it's basically taking a lot on Greenfield Avenue and turning it into a site for food trucks. One of the things I found interesting, because I always find it funny when people talk about building a food truck park. I mean, a food truck park is a parking lot, right? I mean, it's fun for food trucks, but they're going to look beyond that. They're going to have a gazebo. They're going to have trees and a sitting area and cleaning areas and things that kind of elevated to make it truly a park, not just a parking lot.
You know, while we're thinking about food around Milwaukee, I have to ask you this, Tim. How many chefs and restaurants are vying for James Beard recognition this year?
So we did a big look at a bunch of data around the James Beard Awards this year, and I'll get to why in a second. But to actually answer your question, we got a good group of nominees. We got people vying for Best New Restaurant, for Outstanding Bar and Emerging Chef, as well as several nods for Best Chef in the Midwest. So it's going to be interesting later this month when they come out with the nominees for those awards. I want to pause for a second just because the nomenclature that James Beard uses is confusing as can be. So the first group of names that is released, they call semifinalists. And then those semifinalists are pared down to a list of nominees, and the nominees go on to vie to be winners.
So that's what we're waiting for this week, is the selection of nominees?
Exactly. That the semifinalists have been released, and now we're waiting for the nominees. So what's interesting, and why we're going through and crunching the numbers, and if you go to our site, we have a whole data package going back to 1990 when the James Beard Awards started, looking at over time how many nominees and semifinalists and winners there have been in the different categories. But we're up for local institutions are up for national awards. So 1033 Omakase, Vanessa Rose, who's the chef and owner of Mothers, and the Mothership, which is a bar, all of those are vying in these national categories for, you know, Best New Restaurant, Emerging Chef, and Outstanding Bar. Obviously, winning any of the James Beard Awards is a huge deal and says something about the strength of the restaurant industry, but it's particularly interesting to be getting these national looks, where I do think Milwaukee sometimes has, as one chef told us, kind of a Midwest humility about the food scene. And so it's good both internally and externally to have this national viewpoint that, yeah, we're good regionally, and some of our establishments are actually, you know, could be top in the nation.
If only James Beard would consider giving an award to the best food truck, we could all bring it together.
I'm pretty sure that if somebody sponsored it, the James Beard Award might actually consider that. I do think that if that was an award, there are definitely some good local contenders for it.
And I bet you could name them all. Tim Gibbons, Editor-in-Chief of the Milwaukee Business Journal. It's always great to have you here. And welcome back to the second half hour of Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. Well, as you well know, there was a blizzard just as spring was beginning. Plus, we had controversial road names and an early exit for the Badgers. There was a lot more, too. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go.
This major winter storm still hammering Wisconsin. Some areas to the north seeing over 2 feet of snow. Blizzard conditions continuing through the day.
Do they got the donuts out and everything? Is it just a normal day at the Quick Trip?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're working normally in there.
Now, tell me about your experience on the roads this morning.
Oh, absolutely crap.
So I back out of our garage, and I get stuck literally on our driveway.
Dozens of animal rights activists stormed Ridgeland Farms on Sunday and what they call an open rescue. The group forced their way into buildings, caused damage, and left with 23 beagles.
If you look at the photographs, they do not look like animals who have been subject to any mistreatment.
Are you a criminal?
These are sentient, loving beagles that have a right to have the same sort of life and love as every other puppy.
And a fly ball to center. It is back, way back, grand slam, Brandon Lockridge. Me, oh my.
Wow. This is the greatest honor. I can't even believe it. Gurv Mila Mila Mahogoth Sloan.
Jessie Buckley winning the Academy Award for Best Actress for her role in Hamnet.
It was going to be a horse race, and boy, did it live up to the billing.
He is in studio on Wisconsin's Morning News. Olympic champion Jordan Stoltz is in the house.
So what was the first thing you
did when you got home? Was there like one thing that you needed to do or had to do or not?
Oh, I went to bed right away.
So as of right now, the percentage of people who say that Trump devotion syndrome is more irrational than Trump derangement syndrome is 84%.
Happy St. Patrick's Day! That's the sound of Irish musician and longtime Celtic MKE staffer Christina Paris.
The Washington County Executive Committee will consider naming a portion of County Road K Charlie Kirk Way.
Two separate resolutions will be considered by the committee, one authorizing the name change, the other allocating $50,000 from the county's general fund for road name overlays.
Allocating $50,000.
Washington County, what the hell are you thinking here?
So they want you to bring macaroni on your flight so you can donate that to the cause for the security people who are working for free to prevent a bomb from getting on the plane. I love how we've normalized
that. It's the absurdity of the situation.
We have normalized that.
We already paid for the work that they're doing. Yes. They're just not getting it.
College basketball launches into its best time of the year. He is known in some circles as Bracket Jim.
Yes, thousands, millions of people are going to be watching these games as opposed to doing their jobs.
The city of Milwaukee and other cities and counties across the country are now trying to figure out what to do with Cesar Chavez. After disturbing abuse allegations have come out now about the civil rights icons.
What was the most important thing you said in your 45-minute address this morning?
It was great to be able to highlight that ever since I've been county executive, we've ended every year with a surplus.
That is a message that should be shouted.
Wisconsin Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu will not seek re-election this fall,
saying it was, quote, time for a new chapter in my life.
How's your bracket doing?
I'm not well.
Not so good. That wasn't good either.
Jazz, how's your bracket doing?
What bracket?
I went to Washington, D.C. for the Parkinson's Policy Forum. You have to get into the head of a politician and their staff. What they're going for, will it benefit them or not? If you feel like you want to do something like this, it is very possible.
Milwaukee Film Festival has chosen Uke to be the opening night film, so that's
congratulations.
An amazing honor.
Before the first game, he grabbed a tuba and he started shagging fly balls with the tuba.
I love that photo. It seems very Bob.
Chuck Norris has died. 86 years old. I didn't think Chuck Norris could die.
Isn't death afraid of Chuck Norris?
Right. And we say that with love and with affection, of course. Right.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
And Franken.
I should have stayed at home.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
And that is the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text the word WEEK to the Siding Unlimited talk and text line at 855-616-1620, and you can hear it all again. It's 841. Have you ever gotten one of those calls from somebody saying, I'm a police officer? That's probably a scam. So listen to what our consumer expert has to say right after this. You know, if a family is going through a personal crisis, they're not always making the best decisions in the moment. And there are people that take advantage of these situations. Joining us on our WTMJ hotline is Michelle Reinen, our consumer expert from DatCap. And you have seen some targeted family scams, Michelle. Tell us about it.
We have. Recently, a Wisconsin consumer lost thousands of dollars to a scammer who used publicly available information to impersonate a law enforcement official. What happened is this consumer was called about their family member who was actually in jail at the time, and the caller told the consumer that their family member could be let out of jail if they just paid $725. This caller was actually a scammer who was claiming to be a law enforcement officer and provided a fake name to the consumer. But because the details provided to the consumer seemed accurate, and this was a brand new experience for the family, they sent the scammer $725 using a banking app. But the scammer repeatedly claimed that the money hadn't been received, so they sent that same amount three more times. So a total of $2,900 was actually transmitted to this scammer.
How did they finally figure out that they were being taken advantage of?
Well, after all those payments, they actually contacted local officials, and that's when they learned they'd been scammed because the money just kept not being received. And this really just highlights the importance of double-checking and verifying details before sending anyone money, especially when the situation is brand new and never been experienced before. So if you receive that phone call, text message, social media message, email, letter, or any other communication from someone claiming to represent a family member or a law enforcement agency, practice that caution and take your time through the situation.
Did they find the person who was taking advantage of this family?
Well, that's certainly still being worked on by DADCAP and the law enforcement officials to see if we can capture that individual.
All right. So if you think you're being scammed, especially if your family is in crisis, who do we call?
Call the Consumer Protection Hotline at DADCAP, 800-422-7128.
It's 846 and 38 degrees at WTMJ. We'll expect to see some clouds today. It's going to be breezy, cooler. We might even get a few sprinkles or even a shower. 41 for a high, then down to 25 overnight. Tomorrow, sun, a little bit of sunshine, with a high of 40 if you're close to the lake, 46 inland. Then the clouds come back on Tuesday, but we're going to get warmer. 53 will be our high. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a slight chance of a shower, 52 for a high. And then Thursday, mostly cloudy, another chance of rain and a high of 58. Right now in Cedarburg, we have 37 degrees. Kenosha has 37. In Lac La Belle, it is 40 degrees and we're up to 39 at WTMJ. Coming up next, it's Sandy Bax. And boy, what a mess that bachelorette has been. We'll talk about it after this. But I know we're not really... If you're a bachelor or bachelorette fan, you had quite an awakening this week when it was announced this year's Bachelorette is not going to be aired on ABC. Well, to break it all down for us, here's Sandy Max. You know her, of course, from What's on Tap. And Sandy, what the heck is going on? You know, we talked about the secret lives of Mormon wives not that long ago, and you told us what a phenom that had been. And that sort of led to one of the stars being on Dancing with the Stars and being announced as a bachelorette. But now it seems to all be blowing up.
Well, I feel like all of these reality shows are cross-pollinating. And for anybody who's listening going, I don't care about The Bachelor, I bet everybody watches some reality show, whether it's a food show, whether it's one of the housewives shows, whether it's Amazing Race. Like, I feel like reality shows are just part of our lives. And even if you're not a bachelor or bachelorette fan or watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, the fact that these two reality shows have now dovetailed together, and the fact that because of the domestic violence investigation, ABC, who put so much money and production into the Bachelorette franchise, even parading this gal, Taylor Frankie Smith, on the red carpet at the Oscars, they pulled the plug days before the premiere that was supposed to happen tonight. They pulled the plug on the entire series, which is recorded. It is produced. That was a chunk of time in people's lives. And also, on The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, they have had this as a storyline, talking about how, ooh, she's going to be on The Bachelorette, and this is a big deal. And they're also talking about her probation. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't recommend it. I'm easily disturbed. Taylor Frankie Paul has had two fathers for two little ones, like a 4 and 2 year old, like little kids. So she's been in this awful toxic cycle with the latest guy named Taylor. And this video, Libby, have you seen it?
Oh, I sure have. You know, the first tip off should have been that she had three first names. Anybody named Taylor Frankie Paul right there would have been a red flag to me. But here's what I don't understand. Disney Entertainment owns Hulu. Hulu produces Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. And so then another arm of Disney, ABC, decided to take this one very messy person and put her on Dancing with the Stars, and then named her as The Bachelorette. Why would a company like Disney not vet a person who they were pushing into reality stardom?
And she was already on probation for that video that surfaced for that altercation. And there's a lot of suspicion about the deeper family issues here. Is how did TMZ get that video right around this time? Was that strategery to get custody of these children? Because Dakota's other father of the other child have been seen together. And are they trying to get custody of the children? This is just so sad and messy. And now you've got domestic violence. And this is one of those rare occasions. This is one of the first female domestic violence videos that has rippled out. And it really is disturbing. That's why I asked you if you saw it. Like, it's haunting me. And the other huge dynamic to that video is one of the little ones was right there when a stool is thrown. Oh. And you hear that child.
And she got hit with it. But what I don't understand is not only was she charged with three felonies back in 2023, mm-hmm. she pleaded guilty. Yet they decided to go ahead and push her into a starring position.
Especially on The Bachelorette.
Yeah, would you want to be one of those guys who fell for her?
What are those untold stories? And, you know, one of those guys is a dude who grew up in Wisconsin, went to West Allis Central. His name is Brandon Peirce. And Yeah, he's a single dad in South Dakota. And his all-time favorite film is The Notebook. But people really do invest emotionally in these shows. And I think that was another thing that a lot of Bachelorette fans weren't happy about Taylor Frankie Paul being cast. Because, look, it is like watching a rom-com. These Bachelorette shows, they're not supposed to be vehicles for people who are already on reality shows. People could already slide into Taylor Frankie Paul's DMs. They know who she is if they're interested. These Bachelor and Bachelorette shows are supposed to be kind of non-media savvy people who are looking for true love as a last resort on TV because they haven't found it yet in their 20s, you know? And so it messes with the fairy tale part of the Bachelor and Bachelorette, romance and escapism.
All right. So this is obviously a story that we will continue to watch. But there was at least one good news story about some reality stars this week.
Yeah, and I don't think it was part of any reality show, which is highly unusual, especially for the Bravo housewives, who I feel like do not step out of the house in their stilettos unless they're getting paid. This was the Housewives on the Hill event, and it was for a good cause to spotlight that HIV care and funding for, if you've heard of PrEP and HIV medications, really in danger with all of the evolutions of healthcare being under fire and that kind of thing. Well, interestingly enough, Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin opened up an event and introduced Housewives Erica Jane, who I see on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, guilty pleasure, Phaedra Parks, who's on Real Housewives of Atlanta, and Melissa Gorga, who's on the New Jersey version. She introduced an event where they spoke about this, but there were more housewives that were there. NeNe Leakes, also of Atlanta, from Potomac, Candace Dillard Bassett, Marisol Patton of Miami, and Luann de Lesseps of the New York City. But all seven of these women were spotlighting the realities faced by Americans living with HIV, which housewives aren't necessarily known to be altruistic and helping others. They're known more for, you know, drinking the Pinot and screeching at each other and holding grudges. So to see these women come together, and also it was sponsored by a group that is really advocating for the telemedicine platform called Mister that provides online access for those medications. That's a really savvy move to get this in the conversation, to get these high-profile, well-packaged women to talk about this subject and get the attention.
Well, it was good of them to do it. Of course, a couple of those names you mentioned, they've had their own legal problems, but we're not going to go into that today. Hey, Sandy, what are we doing on What's on Tap this week?
Oh, we're getting ready for Brewers opening day, including the preview of the Uke documentary. I will have more updates on that film. And also another documentary called The Sound of a Bucket List that follows a girl who gets her hearing restored.
Can't wait to hear it. Sandy Max with What's on Tap. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Libby.
And coming up on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News, right after the newscast with Nizer, new at 9, Dominic Catronio, the host of Brewers Extra Innings and Brewers Weekly, joins us. We're going to take a look at the team, how they did over the spring training break, and some of the trades they made, and what the season's looking like. We'll talk with Dominic right after this. It's all ahead on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News.
This is Wisconsin's Weekend Morning News with Libby Collins. And now it's time for New at 9.
And welcome back. A little bit later on this hour, we're going to be telling you how data centers could cost you. But before we do anything else new at 9, joining us is the host of Brewers Extra Innings and Brewers Weekly. It is Dominic Catronio, and we are so excited. Thursday is the big opening day at AmFam. And Dom, you've been watching the team very up close and personal during spring training. How have they been looking? What do you think of the team so far?
Thanks for having me, Libby. You know, I think the way I look at this team is a quiet confidence in the way that they've been playing and preparing. It's more of the same disrespect of this team externally, but internally, it's pretty similar to last year's club and maybe just some new faces in the same roles. So I'm really excited to see, in particular, a couple of guys. Jackson Churio, in his third year in the big leagues, has shown some real signs of growth already. A healthy William Contreras is going to go a long way for the Brewers. He was dealing with a finger issue virtually all season last year. And then on the pitching side, there is so many young, talented pitchers, of course, headlined by Jacob Mizorowski taking the ball on opening day. This is a team that has a young core identified and is ready to hang on to it for years to come.
You mentioned disrespect of the team externally. What do you mean by that?
So there are so many prognosticators, and baseball, as we know, is a numbers game, and we can project virtually everything under the sun when it comes to how many home runs are you going to hit, how many stolen bases, you know, what's this guy's earned run average going to be? And there are a lot of smart people in the world that do this for a living. I'm not disparaging them, but I don't understand how the team that's made the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years and won the division 3 consecutive years continues to be disrespected in a way that people have said the same things for 3 straight years. You know, 2 years ago, it was, wow, they traded Corbin Burns. How are they going to win the division? They won the division. Last year, it was like, wow, they traded Devin Williams. How are they going to win the division? They won the division. This year, it's like, wow, they traded Freddie Peralta. Well, we've seen this story before, so I don't understand. The team has shown you their process and why they believe in their process. It's surprising that nobody else in baseball really believes in it either.
Well, you mentioned the trades. What trade are you most excited about?
I really think the Red Sox trade that, you know, a fan favorite in Caleb Durbin, Andrew Monasterio, Anthony Seigler was also in that trade. People were shocked given it was the week before spring training opened and it was your entire third base depth chart. But the Brewers acquired back a player that they originally drafted named David Hamilton, and he had a tremendous spring. He's learning third base for the first time in his career, but offensively he was certainly impressive. But on the other side of that deal, the Brewers received 2 key left-handed pitchers that are both going to pitch in the big leagues for years to come. Kyle Harrison will likely be in the opening day rotation. He will be making a start probably against the Rays in the midweek series next week. And the next kid in that, his name is Shane Drouin, and he's another lefty prospect that really had a great spring training. And he'll be starting one of the exhibition games here on Monday or Tuesday. The thing about Drouin that impresses me is that his stuff is big league ready. It's been health is the reason he hasn't made his big league debut, but he is healthy now and he's excited and he will make his big league debut in a Brewer uniform.
Okay, admittedly, I am not that knowledgeable about how baseball works other than I like going to AmFam and watching the Brewers play. But when you talk about left-handed pitchers, why is that so significant that a team has those on their roster?
It's a good question. I think the way that baseball, you know, it's a lot like American sports, right? Everyone's majority right-handed, right? And the look from a lefty can change things. And traditionally in baseball as well, your best power hitters tend to be left-handed hitters. So one way to neutralize left-handed hitting is to have left-handed pitching. It's a little harder to see the baseball. The ball spins in a different direction than what you're used to as a, you know, from a right-handed pitcher. It's just a different look. It's something to keep guys on their toes. Being left-handed in baseball is super valuable. And basically, if your child is growing up and he's showing signs that he's left-handed, make sure you put a baseball in his hand and they're going to have a job for life.
We're talking with Dominic Catronio. He is the host of Brewers Extra Innings and Brewers Weekly. All right, stupid question. You know you can always expect those from me, Dom. Opening day, the Brewers are playing the Chicago White Sox. Why are they facing a team that's not in their division for the opening game?
That is a great question, actually, Libby, because that's been a topic of conversation in baseball this year when the schedule came out. So Interleague was introduced in the 90s, coming out of the 1994 strike, and Interleague play being the American League and the National League. Remember, the Brewers used to be in the American League, and this used to be a historic rivalry back in the 80s between the White Sox and the Brewers. But the way that Interleague has now changed over the years is from previous iterations where you'd only play one division in the other league, then it was maybe a few more games and a, you know, interleague rival. And now every team plays every team. It's a balanced schedule. So instead of playing 19 games against each team in your division, you're now playing 13 games. So those 24 games are now being spread out against the other league. You get one series a year against the other league's teams, and that's the American League, of course. So the Brewers, five of their first six series are against American League teams, which quite frankly is ludicrous, if you ask me, in the way the baseball tradition works. So you get the White Sox, you get the Rays, you go to Kansas City, you go to Boston, you come home for Washington, hey, there's a National League team, and then the Toronto Blue Jays are here. So it's very odd that the Brewers won't see, let alone a divisional opponent, but a National League opponent until week three.
You know, you said Miss is going to pitch on Thursday. I think we're really excited to see him back out there on the mound. What do you expect to see from him?
You know, Miz told us in the media in his last spring training tune-up on Friday night, I don't think there's such thing as too amped up. I want all the juice. This dude has shown that he thrives in rocking environments. And what I mean by that is, remember the pandemonium of his first three, four starts where his big league debut was a Wednesday against the Cardinals and suddenly 30,000 were here. And then next start was Paul Skeens versus Jacob Mizorowski, the two best young arms in baseball last year. And that was like a Tuesday and suddenly there were 40,000 watching that, right? And then a couple starts later, it was Jacob Mizorowski versus Clayton Kershaw, the future Hall of Famer on the Dodgers, and the Brewers won that game too. And then you look at his postseason play. He had three tremendous games in the postseason last year. This dude means it. You can look at the track record to say this kid wants the ball in the biggest moments. He's a little bit of a goofball in a loving way out there. He lets his emotions out on his sleeve. He shows you when he's fired up. He shows you when he's frustrated when he doesn't execute a pitch. It's just so refreshing to see somebody that isn't a robot out there and is clearly enjoying his craft.
All right. The question everybody is wondering, Dom, how's the season going to go?
I still sit here, like I said in the first question, Libby, I still see the Brewers as being the favorites in the division. I know people might think that's a homer take, given what the Cubs have done this offseason. Heck, the Reds made the playoffs last year. The Pirates have gotten better, too. But I sit here and look at this squad that won 97 games a year ago. Yes, there are new faces, but I remind folks, the opening day roster last season, if you want to go chuckle at what the season ended, go look at the opening day roster last year. And also remember how they started last year. 0-4, miserable starts of the year, you know, the home run barrage at Yankee Stadium, and yet they still won 97 games. So I still see this team as the favorites in the division. They have tremendous pitching. They have an incredible bullpen. And they have young, budding stars like Bryce Turang and Jackson Churio and Jet Williams, a guy that they acquired, and Brandon Sproat, another guy that they acquired. These are going to be quick fan favorites in the 2026 season.
Dom Catronio, I know you are going to keep us apprised throughout the season on Brewers Extra Innings and Brewers Weekly, and I hope to talk to you many more times between now and the World Series.
Let the marathon begin. Thank you, Libby.
Dominic Catronio. I am Libby Collins. It is 9:17 on WTMJ. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll hear from Eric Bilstead with another Everyday Hero. I'm Libby Collins on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. It's 9:19, and it's time to recognize another Everyday Hero.
An Everyday Hero is when Wisconsin's Morning News celebrates an average John or Jane Doe who had no idea when they got up one morning they'd be saving a life. Today we head to San Antonio. Rene Villarreal Able and his wife were on the interstate when they noticed a vehicle being driven erratically. This SUV was weaving in and out of traffic, and at one point it bounced off the concrete wall and just kept going.
He was coming off that left side wall already.
That's Rene chatting with Ken's 5. It's a CBS affiliate in San Antonio.
Do not be by that 18-wheeler right now, please. Do not be by this 18-wheeler.
His wife, Andrea, recorded video of it. You can hear it here.
Oh, no.
Somebody needs to stop him. What are we going to do?
I don't know.
What are we going to do? Oh, God.
We saw him keep swerving. That's when we realized something was wrong. And we went to go check on him. And then that's when we finally came up to, he was unconscious.
The driver was out cold on the interstate, weaving in and out of traffic.
Oh, God. He's going to hit us. They're asleep, Renee.
That's when we realized, okay, he's not going to stop and he could hurt more people.
So Renee takes action.
So I was just really worried about his well-being, seeing his state, you know, like that. It was terrible. I don't wish that upon nobody.
If you listen closely, you can hear it.
Oh, God.
The SUV hits his rear end. They slow down. Finally, to a stop, he basically pulled a pit maneuver. Never done that before. You can see the video. Just text the word HERO to the Siding Unlimited WDTMJ Talk and Text line 855-616-1620. As this was happening, another driver stops. She happened to be a nurse, and she helped do CPR on that unconscious driver.
He lost color, but he came back, and that made it worth it. Being brought back was made everything worth it.
This guy had a pulse and was breathing when they finally got him in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. What would you do if you saw this same thing happen? For Renee, he used his pickup truck to slow the SUV down and save this man's life. Thank you, Rene Villarreal Able. You, sir, are an everyday hero. Everyday Hero, sponsored by Azura Memory Care and Assisted Living, transforming the culture of care. Eric Bilstead, WTMJ News.
Thanks a lot, Eric. Always great to hear from you and the people that you highlight during Everyday Hero. It's 922 and 39 degrees on WTMJ.
The following is a paid presentation. Advice and opinions expressed during the Sunday Sip are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.
I'm Vince Vitrano, and this is the Sunday Sip. We're talking about your workplace today with Alex Eichhorn from Axis Legal. That's AXIS Legal. Good to see you, Alex.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Vince.
Well, I know we're going to be talking a bit about workers' compensation. Everybody's heard that term, but I'm not sure everybody knows what it means. Can you give us the easy definition?
Yeah, really, Wisconsin was the first state to introduce workers' compensation. What it means is that if you're injured while working on the job, you are covered for your lost wages, you're covered for your medical bills, and you're covered for any permanent injury. So we were the first state, and ours is really looked at as one of the gems throughout the nation.
Well, as you do this here in Wisconsin, I hear you say a lot, I want to talk to people who are worn down by work. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we don't just represent people who have an acute injury, something falls on them or they feel a pop in their back. We represent people oftentimes who have worked for an employer for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and they're doing physical labor. And over time, the analogy I use is the drop of rain on a stone. You know, after the first week, you don't see a divot in the stone. After a year, maybe a minor divot. But after 5, 10 years, there's a big divot in that stone from where the rain has been hitting. And it's just like that for injured workers. You know, they're day in, day out, bending over, lifting, and eventually their back goes out or they need some surgical intervention. And what we're able to do is bring it all together. We're able to speak with their doctors, speak with them, and make a compelling case that their work activity materially contributed to their bad back. And if we can do that, it brings the whole case into compensability so they can get lost wages, medical bills, and potentially even a large settlement so that they can support themselves if they're unable to work in the future.
So what you're saying is folks might be entitled to compensation who have sort of repetitive motion types of things that have occurred over a long time, as opposed to, I think most of us think, well, I have to have had an accident. There has to be a fall, some sort of tragic moment.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. So, you know, it's a great case, and so many people don't realize it, but the standard is really what we have to show is there's a material contribution. So it means, and it's been defined as very limited contribution of their work activity to the ultimate surgical intervention. So if you've got someone who is a construction worker for 30 years lifting day in, day out, and they need a fusion and they're 55 years old, they go in, they do an MRI and their back looks like that of a 70-year-old, their doctor is very, very likely going to say that there's this acceleration. You know, their back is worse than it otherwise would have been. And that is what we need to prove to make it a payable claim. So we have a great deal of success with that.
Talking with Alex Eichhorn of Axis Legal, that's AXIS Legal. This is a real specific area of law. Alex, what got you interested in helping Wisconsin workers in this way?
Yeah, so I started off not in this area of law, but I started seeing a lot of collateral cases or cases where we were doing disability and we would ask, how did you become disabled? And it was so very frequent that people would say, well, I blew out my back at work, or both my knees are shot, I needed a hip replacement, and I ultimately couldn't work anymore. And that was kind of the impetus for me to start the division about now coming up on a decade and a half ago, is to help these people. So from there, we've now grown to the state's largest workers' compensation firm. We help more individuals than any other firm in the state. Over the last decade and a half, we've helped well over 3,000 people, and we've recovered nearly $40 million now for these people.
Alex, how does someone know the difference between when they should try to work through something like this with their employer first on their own versus when they really need to get legal representation and contact you?
And I think the reality of anyone is that when you have even a minor injury or something you think is minor or hope is minor, you don't go report it right away, right? Like, I remember I had an injury at work. I hurt my back and I did the wrong thing. I never actually reported it to my boss at the time. And, you know, 10 years later, I still have some issues with it. So the real answer is it's up to every person. However, by at least informing your employer that an injury occurred, it puts it on the record. And then there's something to relate back to. If indeed in a month, you know, that injury that you thought was going to go away is still there, then you can say to your boss, hey, you know, I'm actually need to go to the doctor. I'm still having the same pain with whatever it was, the knee or the back. And it makes it a lot easier. So report the injury if you believe it's at all severe.
Alex Eichhorn is with us from Axis Legal. Okay, Alex, for someone listening right now who's like, that's me. I'm hearing my story right now. What's their first step?
Give us a call. It's a risk-free consultation. You're going to speak with myself or one of the other attorneys at the office or a skilled intake paralegal. We can be reached at 414-414-4814, and we're readily available. So give us a call. It's entirely risk-free.
What's that first experience like for when someone contacts Axis Legal? How do things get started?
Yeah, it's really, really straightforward and easy. You are going to speak with a human. You're going to speak with someone who's very familiar with workers' compensation. One thing I could say is all of our staff have been here for a long time. And as such, everyone is very familiar with what the first steps to protect yourself are. So you're going to speak with someone. And at the end of the conversation, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable with the process than you were at the beginning. And if you need us, we're here. But oftentimes, you know, from the get-go, we're just giving you the advice that's necessary, how to file the claim, what to do next to protect yourself, and then following up with you every few weeks to ensure everything continues to go steady or well until we're needed.
Sounds like rewarding work, Alex.
Really do like it a lot. It's I've done other areas of law, and this is the area that I decided to focus on when we started Axis Legal entirely.
Also contact them online at Axis Legal. That's AXIS Legal. Anytime. Alex Eichhorn with us this morning. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks again, Vince.
I'm Vince Vitrano, and this is the Sunday Sip.
Temperatures dropping. We're down to 36 at 9:30 on WTMJ. It's 9:37. Welcome back to Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I'm Libby Collins. We've been hearing quite a bit about data centers, and some say they're good for communities, but others stand firmly against them. Joining us on our WTMJ hotline is Isaiah Ness. He's CEO of Sunbear Industries, and he's written an article called Wisconsin's Unfolding Energy Crisis. Explain what you mean.
The big thing that we're looking at is corporations are investing roughly $30 billion into Wisconsin's data center AI infrastructure, which obviously has its economic benefits. However, they are trying to cut deals and trying to position themselves to purchase power not only lower than what residents purchase power for and businesses purchase power for, but at wholesale rates or even slightly below wholesale energy rates. The piece that is problematic for residents of Wisconsin is every time a large power consumption facility comes onto the grid, not only does it make the grid slightly more unstable, but they're consuming so much power at such a low rate that the utilities have no choice but to increase rates for everyone else. And so what you see is a big data center company comes in, they lock in a rate of 4 cents a kilowatt hour for however many years, and residents who are already paying the second highest electricity rate in the Midwest and the top 20 electricity rate in the country, their rates are only going to continue to rise.
I think a lot of people are surprised when you say that Wisconsin power rates are as high as they are. What do you base that on?
We base that off of every year government releases sources showing what the average cost per kilowatt hour is in each sector, residential, and every year we track those prices. And so this year, if you were to exclude Alaska as an outlier, Wisconsin was in the 15th spot of that most recent report.
Okay, now you write that there are multi-day outages in the tribal nations around Wisconsin, as well as Milwaukee neighborhoods. Now, are these outages more frequent than they used to be?
Yes, they are. And it's hard to determine what the frequency is. We can look at it at a larger picture of how long power outages have lasted and how many homes are affected year over year and see that increase. But the tough part is it's hard to tell what the increase in power stability or decrease in power stability is at a specific house, right? A house might be used to losing power maybe once or twice a year. And we care not only about the frequency of how often, but we also care about the frequency of the duration. And that's really what we're focusing on. And we have communities that we've worked with in Wisconsin, for example, Menominee Nation, Sakagan Chippewa. I've been around and their power outages have lasted as long as 15 days.
We're talking with Isaiah Ness from Sun Bear Industries, and he also wrote an article called Wisconsin's Unfolding Energy Crisis. All right, so you're saying that these outages are lasting longer. What is that based on? Is it the infrastructure itself? There aren't that many data centers yet. Is it a drain from them? Why are we seeing these increased and longer duration outages?
Several factors. You have a lot of overhead power lines still. So when a storm comes through and your power line instability is based on an overhead line, more and more of those are being impacted. But we also just have a lot of aging infrastructure. And so there's a lot of utility infrastructure, a lot of power lines, transformers, substations that have not been maintained and upgraded the way they should. And the tough part is the regulations on upgrading those systems are not always clear. And every single year, the demand increases. And so there's more homes built every year. There's more businesses that come in every year. There's always new infrastructure that is already planned in the state. And the power grid gets stretched more thin, more thin, more thin. What ends up happening is big utility companies and the big transmission companies spend most of their time on new infrastructure or expanding infrastructure rather than infrastructure maintenance.
Okay, so bottom line, what is it you're looking for? You're saying that preferential treatment's being given to these data centers. What do you want to see done?
What I would like to see done is a discussion with all stakeholders of Wisconsin on how those deals are going to impact rates for everyone else. And quite honestly, I think that there's a balance as well where residents, existing business owners, people that have been in this state should not have to go for a 10% increase on their electricity bill because a big Fortune 100 company wants to put a data center in Wisconsin. If we're not involved in the discussion, you're going to hear about a data center coming. You may or may not think too much of it. You may or may not have an opinion on it. And then a couple weeks, a couple months, maybe a year later, you're going to get a notice from the utility company and it's going to say, hey, your bill is going to increase at this percentage. Reach out if you have any questions with a generic hotline number. And so the tough part is we are being introduced to the impact after it's already been determined. And we truly believe that tribes, communities, residents, businesses should all be able to come to the discussion to understand what these rates are, why they are being discounted at such a significant rate and how it is going to impact the rest of the stakeholders in Wisconsin. I recommend, one, people understand what a data center truly is and what the power demand is. You know, they've showed a bunch of different reports, and you're going to hear a lot of different things about that environmental impact, about the water, about the electricity, everything that comes with it. But I hope that people take the time to truly educate themselves, learn and understand what a data center is. Is there one coming to your community? Who's supplying them with power? Is that who's also supplying you with power? And just understand the basics so that you can be educated in the process, but you're also not hit with a bunch of surprises when things change in your circumstances or local economy.
Isaiah Ness from Sunbear Industries, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, Libby.
It's 9:43 on WTMJ. Coming up next, who do we have on Conversations today? Oh, wait until you hear about this one. It's a good one. All ahead right here on Wisconsin Weekend Morning News. I imagine that when you're in an emergency situation and you get a doctor or a nurse treating you, you're not thinking about what they do outside of the hours they spend in the ER. But are you aware the Medical College of Wisconsin has an orchestra made up entirely of their medical staff, students, and employees? Well, research scientist and musician Sarah Winia Smith told me about an interesting correlation between science and studying music as a child.
I find it interesting that so many medical professionals studied music when they were children.
There are so many of us. There are people in this group that I think could pursue music professionally. I mean, and many of them do play professionally here and there. It, I think, goes along with the personality. I mean, sometimes you might think it conflicts with the hard sciences. You know, it's just so rigid and thinking, memorize this, memorize that. But a lot of the skills that you need to thrive in a medical environment, being able to just work hard at something until you get it, it's also common to music. So many of us spent a lot of our childhood practicing a ton.
You know, nobody knows exactly when a person might be facing a medical emergency. And that includes the doctors who perform with the Medical College of Wisconsin Orchestra. Sarah talked about how musicians sometimes leave practices without any warning.
You had said that you give grace to the members that might have a demanding schedule. They're busy saving lives, and they can't quite make rehearsal at times. Have you ever been in the midst of a rehearsal where any of the members have been either on call or an emergency has come in where they've had to say, excuse me, we have to leave now?
Some of our medical colleagues have gotten up and left abruptly in the middle of rehearsal. I don't usually end up knowing what exactly happened, but, you know, when somebody leaves with a sense of that urgency, you figure they're going over to Frederick, maybe to attend to a patient, or, they've been called back to the clinic.
So that medicine still comes before music.
Absolutely. And all of us understand that. Priority one.
It's been said music has a healing power unto itself. And Medical College of Wisconsin research scientist and musician Sarah Winia Smith is going to talk with me about staff members and students who perform with the MCW Orchestra. They have a jazz band and also small ensembles. And how this practice and this music enhances their lives both personally and professionally. It's all this morning at 11 o'clock on WTMJ Conversations.
The following is a paid presentation. Advice and opinions expressed during the Sunday Sip are solely that of the hosts or guests and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.
Welcome to the Sunday Sip. I am Kristen Bry, co-host of Point Taken, but your host for Sunday Sip today. And today we are talking about reading and literacy with Dr. Scott Frank, CEO and founder of Open Literacy, and Erica Badger, Chief Academic Officer at Milwaukee College Prep. Erica, first, tell me more about Milwaukee College Prep and then also your partnership with Open Literacy.
Yeah, so Milwaukee College Prep is a network of four schools on the north side of Milwaukee. We serve about 2,000 scholars in grades K-4 through 8th grade, and then we also have a K-3 program, a three-year-old kindergarten program. Our relationship with Open Literacy started last year. And it grew over time. So last year we had a partnership where we supported about 80 kids on open literacy. And this year we grew to have 200 kids being supported with open literacy. And so open literacy is a one-to-one virtual tutoring with trained teachers that happens during the school day, where our kids are receiving one-to-one tutoring 3 times a week for 30 minutes. And the instruction focuses on the science of reading, building skills like phonemic awareness and phonics, fluency, comprehension. And it aligns with our model with an MCP and really fits into our MTSS program.
Amazing. And I guess, Sarah, so we keep hearing about a literacy crisis. It's not just in Milwaukee. It's not just in Wisconsin. It's across the country. But what does that actually look like when you have an organization called Open Literacy? Like, what are you seeing?
So if you look at the national picture, about a third of students across the nation are reading at grade level at fourth grade. So not great, right? That's a large number of students who are considered not proficient. When you look specifically at Milwaukee, those numbers are lower. And on the statewide assessment for reading, you see that in Milwaukee, you have about 27% of fourth graders who are considered proficient. And on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP, you see that just 9% of students are considered proficient. So that's just a huge numbers of kids who aren't reading at grade level. The NAEP also has something called the TUDA. And the TUDA focuses just on urban districts. And Milwaukee ranks among the lowest performing of all the cities. So just Detroit and Cleveland and DC, depending on what grade levels and subjects you're looking at, rank lower than Milwaukee in terms of our reading outcomes. So it's critical, as we partner with Milwaukee College Prep, to think about how we can really significantly transform those numbers. And MCP is just doing a stellar job of thinking about that.
So when we think about kids as individuals, when you can't read or struggle to read, I think some of us as adults, we can kind of assume what that does to someone's life. But what are the actual outcomes when someone never really becomes proficient in reading?
This is where, you know, it sounds kind of cliche, but literacy literally is a civil right, because it affects every single aspect of your life outcomes, your job earnings, your health outcomes, your job choices, so your access to higher education. So there's just so many pieces of life that become intertwined with literacy.
Erica, I have a toddler, so not quite reading yet. So these terms, tier one, tier two, and tier three instruction, are new to me. What are they, and why is tier three specifically so important?
Yeah. So tier one is your core instruction. You're giving high quality, you're using a high quality curriculum. It's what all kids are getting in the classroom from a well-trained teacher that's delivering on grade level material. That's tier one. Everybody has access to it. Tier two is where you're getting a little bit more targeted support. So it might be in a small group. It might be a reteach. It might be filling in some foundational gaps. But it's in a small group where you're getting targeted support for something that you need. And tier three is when it really intensifies a little bit. It's often one-on-one or even in a smaller group. And that's where our partnership with Open Literacy comes in, is that they are a tier three support for our scholars. and it's so important for them to have that one-to-one relationship that they're building with their tutors, and that they're getting intervention on their just right level. It's really hard when you have a classroom of 26 kids to give every single child everything that they need. But that tier three support in our partnership with Open Literacy in our first and second grades, that's where we're targeting with Open Literacy, has been a real game changer in being able to give that tier three one-on-one support.
And it seems obvious, right? It's like that kind of one-on-one tutoring is always really important. But what's happening in that setting, Sarah, that makes such a big difference, especially I'd imagine quickly with students?
We do see students move really fast. They make about 2 years of growth in 1 year of instruction. So we're doubling that growth. But I think what's more critical is thinking about what we're doing for kids as learners. So when they show up to tutoring, they have the same tutor for the whole year. They develop a deep relationship with that tutor. That tutor deeply believes in them as learners and is just rooting for them at every step of the way. And students feel really good about that. So they build not only key foundational skills, but they also build
a stronger identity and confidence as both a reader and a learner. And they take that back to class, and suddenly they're more participatory in tier one instruction, and maybe their attendance improves. We see attendance data shift as a result of high quality tutoring. So not just do we see this doubled literacy growth, doubled expected outcomes, we see a shift in their overall confidence as learners and readers, and their overall willingness to take part in classroom activities.
So this is maybe a question for both of you, but when you hear those numbers that are fairly concerning as far as what proficient reading rates are, what gives you hope inside of this work and working with students and where we're headed when it comes to literacy in Milwaukee or in the state?
Well, I'm incredibly hopeful. I know that those numbers are very dismal, but I am incredibly hopeful because of the shifts that we've been making within MCP between a curricular standpoint, partnering with high-quality tutoring, and then just seeing what our scholars are capable of gives me incredible hope for the future for our kids.
We know that 95% of kids can learn to read with really good instruction, and I hang on to that every single day. As we look at what's happening at MCP and other schools that we partner with, seeing that we can control the outcomes. High quality instruction is sort of the solution because that's what we can control. And so that gives me quite a bit of hope. And seeing kids' excitement is, of course, always very hopeful.
I ditto that. Seeing kids excited is very fun. Sarah, if schools across the country committed to high dosage, targeted tier three instruction, how different could outcomes look 5 years from now?
Well, we talked about tiered instruction. So tier one, tier two, tier three, tier one being what everyone gets, tier two being what some kids get, tier three being that targeted one-to-one, really targeted intervention. And right now, especially in Milwaukee, that isn't sort of a triangle shape, it's an inverted pyramid. And so you have many kids who need really targeted intervention and fewer kids who are getting what they need in that tier one. And so we want to flip that around. We want to sort of balance it out so that schools and school systems are operating in a sustainable way so that the students are served well by what's happening in tier one, and 20% of students need targeted support and 10% of students need that high quality intervention. And so as we think at a systems level, which I think MCP is doing really well, shifting those systems takes time. But I think we can move from that inverted pyramid to that triangle that we're really aiming for.
Erica, how can listeners learn more about Milwaukee College Prep?
You can go to mkeprep.com and you can check out our website, because we are recruiting for high quality teachers and educational assistants for the upcoming school year, as well as enrolling for next year. So mkeprep.com.
Great.
That's tight.
All right.